what I've seen not work is AI personalization at scale. I get emails, I'm sure you do too, all the time that are like, "Hey, Jonathan, I saw you on, in this case, Jonathan Gandalf's podcast." And I'm like, cool. And then the rest of the email has nothing to do with that. And I'm like, okay, so to clarify, you're building a connection with me by stating a fact, and then there's nothing else. Like, the sky is blue. By the way, have you considered solar panels?
I'm Jonathan Gandalf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by Audience Plus. Our mission is to shake out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals and stir up fresh conversation, all to help you connect your brand with the right audience at the right time. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. Jonathan here, co-founder and CEO of Audience Plus, where I'm thrilled to be joined by a fellow product marketer, I'll call that, or neither of us are product marketers by title now, but I think we both have a passion for it. So we'll spend some time on that topic today. We're going to talk content, product marketing, go-to-market, startup, go-to-market. It's going to be a fun conversation. This episode came organically out of a conversation we had separately. It just felt like Jonathan here, Jonathan Pipik, founder and CEO of Blue Manta Consulting, had so many like interesting observations that I made it a point to make sure we got him on the Content Cocktail Hour, which we're excited to be recording today. So I'm rambling. I'm excited. Jonathan, in your own words, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks so much for having me, Jonathan. Great last name, by the way.
Appreciate that. Great first name too, to you, by the way.
You know, you do what you can. So sure. Happy to give a quick intro. Long story short, I run Blue Manta Consulting. We're a go-to-market slash product marketing consultancy for B2B SaaS startups. Essentially what that means is we work either fractionally or project-based with the B2B SaaS startups on all things product marketing, from say ICP and personas, position messaging, pricing, packaging. As long as it's product marketing, we do it. Before that, spent a decade plus in product marketing, working across a wide range of companies from like Fortune 500 insurance, mid-sized HR tech, cybersecurity startup, a whole bunch of other kind of startups and SMBs, and realized I love the startup space, but wanted to work with more than one startup at a time. And fast forward a few years, here we are.
Love that. Well, we're going to dig in. I love product marketing. So we're going to dig into that. You said all things product marketing, and I'm really curious the definition of all things product marketing, because it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. We'll get there though. This is the Content Cocktail Hour. So before we get there, we always ask all of our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
Ooh, that is a good question. I'm kind of an old fashioned guy and I like old fashions. So Woodford Reserve, I feel like is the perfect kind of, like if you think of like that, like a chart, like an axis of like cost and taste, to me, Woodford Reserve is like that perfect bullseye. So yeah, Woodford Reserve, old fashions.
Thinking in a 2x2 matrix, you truly are a product marketer here. That's wild. You're the first person
Can't
to-
turn it off.
You're the first person to answer that question with a visual and a graph, which makes my heart sing. I always tell our team, if it can be put in a 2x2 matrix, I will put it in a 2x2 matrix. So that's a good jumping off point. You said all things product marketing, startups. My background, I was a product marketer at the last company I was at. That was actually the role I started in there, ended up leading the marketing team. That was the first time I was a product marketer by title, but really like learned that I had been doing product marketing prior to that role. You mentioned some of the responsibilities that fall underneath the umbrella of product marketing, but it means so many different things to so many different people. Even at the business I was at, for part of the time I reported to product, for part of the time I reported to marketing, that I actually bounced back and forth a few times, but it was like the role kind of never changed either. So it was kind of just, it was like the organization was trying to figure out what it means. So let's just start there. Kind of in the startup world, what does product marketing mean to you? Like, what are you looking for when you are going in to help a business, maybe a startup specifically?
Yeah. So, I mean, like you said, it varies at every org. I've also been in two companies back to back where I had six different leaders in the span of a year and a half. And then I think like eight leaders in the span of 2 years and departments too. So yeah, I'm totally with you. Product marketing varies. At startups, generally speaking, they're in charge of kind of defining who we go after, which, you know, ICP personas is kind of the common vernacular there, or segments. It's kind of a bigger, you know, overarching kind of a category. Two, when you figure out who they are, how do you reach them? So demand generation or gross marketing or digital marketing, whatever you call them these days, they're the ones who actually do the reaching out, right, via marketing campaigns. But we're the ones that ideally understand the customer so well, because we've done a lot of that customer research, and we can say, oh, well, they listen to this podcast, they use these social media channels, they're part of these peer groups, they're part of these Slack communities, so on and so forth. So really identifying like how you reach them. Once you do reach them, What do you tell them? Which again goes back to position messaging. How are you going to differentiate your product and your company from hundreds or thousands of competitors? That's the other piece. Once you've differentiated, shown them the value, great. How are you going to price and package your product in a way that is one, super simple to understand, two, scales with value, right, in a perfect world, and three, is another way to differentiate your company as well. And then four, once you've kind of gone through these four key pieces, the buyers have ideally bought the product, how are you going to ensure that they get value out of it, right? How do you get them to value quickly? How do you get them to adopt the product, engage with the product, et cetera? Along the way, there's obviously different components like sales enablement, product adoption, maturity curves, so on and so forth. But at a very high level, those are the big pieces. Product launches, of course, so on and so forth.
Maybe this is starting to change, but this was the case of the business that I joined as a product marketer. Feels like oftentimes product marketing was like the last hire a marketing team would make from a function perspective. It's you hire demand gen, you hire brand and creative, you hire maybe like just generalist. And then product marketing was always this last like very specific hire. But I've started to see maybe a little bit of a drumbeat, thanks to probably smart people like yourself, that product marketing should maybe be the first hire or one of the early hires for a startup to make in their marketing department. And I think it makes a ton of sense based on what you just said. So many businesses will say, oh, we need more demand or we need more top of funnel or more leads, right? And they'll hire demand gen before they even have product market fit. And that person's just not set up for success. Even the best demand gen marketer in the world is going to struggle in that role because you don't have product market fit. And a lot of what you just walked through is the exercise you need to go through to get there. So I guess my question is, when should a startup consider hiring product marketing? And should that be a full-time hire that they bring in-house, or should they partner with somebody like Blue Manta, or is it just kind of depend case by case?
Yeah, so the short answer is it depends, right? When you talk full-time, let's just stick to full-time first and then we'll explore the fractional scenario. With full-time, they really, in my experience, right, back in the day, I would have told you product marketer every single time, 10 out of 10 times. What I've found though, is especially in the last like 5 years, you're seeing these founders and these companies that these startups that are just like absolutely unbelievable. These founders are just really, really good. Like they really understand their customers, their industry. They've been in it for decades. They've interviewed hundreds, literally hundreds of prospects, not sales, like interviews, right? Like just to learn their pain points. And what I've found is, if you have a founder that truly understands customers, truly understands a product and can communicate it effectively, in essence, they're a product marketer. So go hire demand gen person as your first marketing hire. Give them, like, you have to democratize the knowledge in your brain as a founder. But if you're able to, and you're able to give that to the demand gen person, they can run and you can grow and scale your business. However, if the flip side is true, where you are very technical, you're super in the weeds on the product, right? Like you're like classic technical founder and you really struggle with articulating value, do not hire a demand gen as your first hire. Hire a product marketer, distill that down, figure out who are you targeting? What are you going to tell them? You know, that list we just went through, and then outsource your demand gen to an agency, which is very common at startups. I would argue probably all startups do that to some degree, right? That's kind of the winning combination. As far as fractional, what I've found is that when startups hire product marketers, which I think is great, they tend to hire entry-level product marketers. So maybe not like an associate or coordinator, but a manager who usually has like less than 5 years of experience. What's scary about that is you're essentially betting the future and the success of your company on someone who's not super experienced, which one isn't really fair to them because their manager does not have product marketing in their title. It's usually like either CMO, CPO, or CEO, right? And then two, it's also kind of a gamble for you as a company. So what I recommend in those situations is hold off on hiring that full-time product marketer, hire a fractional product marketer like myself or someone on my team at Blue Manta who has decade plus, 2 decades of experience, have them establish the foundation. So essentially build the product marketing engine, so to speak, right? Figure out your ICP, your personas, your positioning, your messaging, like basically, you know, get to 1.0 on all of those, then hire a product marketer to basically drive the car that we've built, right? We build a car for you to change analogies for you. We build that racing car for you. We give you a GPS map of how to get to your next destination. We give you the car keys. We gas up the car. We've built the engine, fine-tuned it, et cetera. And then we hand over the keys to that more entry-level hire who can then, of course, run the kind of pre-programmed race, adjust as needed on the fly, et cetera. But asking someone to be both a mechanic and the race car driver when they have less than 5 years of experience just doesn't seem fair. So that's typically what I recommend is like start off with fractional. Obviously, I'm biased, right? But get that 10, 20 years of experience to build your engine and plan out the route, and then hire someone to drive it who's maybe not experienced enough to build a race car, but can certainly drive it.
I love that analogy. And as somebody who's based in Indianapolis, you're speaking my race car language. So
there you go.
Love that. Racing and marketing. That's quite the Venn diagram for me here. So I'm going to zoom out of the product marketing role maybe a little bit specifically here, because you mentioned, I mean, you've worked with a ton of startups. You've seen a lot. Maybe just broadly right now, you know, we kind of went through the Zerp era and then kind of the SaaS winter. I would argue we're maybe still in that, or at least in the rev tech space. It's pretty challenging right now. Just broadly at a high level, as you kind of look across your clients that you've worked with, what are you seeing working and not working right now? Maybe some pattern recognition.
That's a good question. I think in the last like 6 to 12 months, what I've seen not work is AI personalization at scale. I'm sure there's one or two out there that work, but the grand majority, like I get emails, I'm sure you do too, all the time that are like, hey, Jonathan, I saw you on, in this case, Jonathan Gandalf's podcast. Yeah. And I'm like, cool. And then the rest of the email has nothing to do with that.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, so to clarify, you're building a connection with me by stating a fact, and then there's nothing else. Like, the sky is blue. Right. By the way, have you considered solar panels? Like, it's just complete. Yeah. So personalization at scale, just like, so far, I haven't seen it really work well. It's more, if anything, like it's causing a lot of accounts to be flagged, yep. right? As like basically spam. So that's been an issue. Haven't seen that succeed. What else? Hyper-focus on ads. I would say that's even like more than a year. That's probably like 2 years, 2.5 yeah. years, three, where it's just like continuing diminishing returns. A lot of reasons, but I think the base is there's more and more competition for these AdWords. Customers are more and more going back towards an era of community and partnership ways to approach selecting tools and products that they buy. I think those are kind of the two big reasons. And then I guess the third thing I'm seeing is a lot of startups are realizing that positioning messaging is great and it's very required and it's very needed, which is fantastic. I wish it would have come to that realization like 10 years ago, but anyway. But the other piece they're realizing now is distribution really is king, right? It's not necessarily about position messaging. I'll give you another analogy, right? You have 10 people lined up. One person's wearing a bright pink jacket. The rest of the people are wearing all black like me. Who stands out? The person with the position messaging that's differentiated, right? That pink jacket. As soon as AI introduces 100 competitors instead of those 10, and those 100 happen to stand in front of that person wearing that pink jacket, guess what? That position and messaging that's super differentiated, even though it's still differentiated against those 100 additional competitors that are all wearing black, the customer that's at the very front of the line and has 100 people in front of them can't get to it, can't see it, right? So that positioning and messaging, again, differentiated, beautiful. April Dunford is thrilled. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't matter because there's no distribution, can't get to your customer. So that's kind of the third big one I'm seeing as well.
Yeah, and that's kind of a symptom of personalization at scale, or at least the attempt of, right? Everyone, like, it's made it easier.
Oh, for sure.
There's just so much more noise, right? And we're seeing that a ton across all things. I really appreciate that perspective and kind of sharing those insights. I'm going to shift kind of into content now a little bit, maybe perhaps a bit selfishly here. I can tell you we have seen throughout kind of our course of working with marketing teams, the teams where content and product marketing work together, there's a tight correlation between the brands that are creating high quality content and the alignment between product marketing and content marketing. Even sometimes same team, sometimes same person.
Yep.
How do you recommend like product marketing and content marketing working together?
Yeah, so I think there's been a few conversations about this on LinkedIn recently as well. I've seen a few different scenarios work. One where content reports up to product marketing. I think that works if product marketing understands content marketing. So product marketers are like notorious. I'm sure you know this, right? Being a product marketer yourself, are notorious for saying, nobody understands me, right? That's like a classic product marketing, right? Like there's even a book that the PMA put out, right? That's called like product marketing, like misunderstood or something, right? By the same token, like we can't manage content marketing and not know how content marketing works, right? So if you think content marketing is a bunch of blog posts and some one pagers, I'm sorry, my friend, you should not manage content marketing. If you do know how content marketing works and you do understand that at a sophisticated level, great. I think product marketing can then provide the inputs that content marketing needs in order to be successful. I have not seen product marketing report up to content. I don't think that's a good idea. I think it probably makes most sense that both report up to a marketing leader, CMO, VP of marketing, whatever. And the concept here is, at least in my view, is you kind of have the product marketing be the thread between demand gen, content, product, customer success, sales, et cetera, and start at the very beginning of product ideation to say like, hey, let me go talk to customers and figure out what are their issues and or pain points in this specific arena, share that with product builds, you know, a product based on that. And you still take those pain points and you share that with the content marketing team and say, hey, our customers and the product that product management is building have these pain points. We should write about them, right? So like if you have to make this up, if you basically have QuickBooks, right? Before QuickBooks was QuickBooks, you should talk about, man, it's a pain in the butt to do accounting for your small business or bookkeeping, right? That's probably what it was more accurately called. It's a pain in the butt to pay vendors. It's a pain in the butt to manage multiple bank accounts, so on and so forth, right? Hey, content marketing team, these are the pain points you want to write about. That's one avenue. And so on and so forth, right? As you build the product, then product marketing creates the position messaging, defines the ICP and personas based on, you know, the original research that was done. You share that with the content marketing team because now they can actually write tailored specifically to one persona, usually the champion or the buyer, right? Sometimes other folks in the buying committee, but typically the buyer and the champion. Same thing with product. They continue to build the product based on customer pain points. Once you launch it, once you have that position messaging, ICP, personas, et cetera, pricing, packaging, you share that with the sales team, you enable them. Same thing with customer success. And then as the product gets closer to or starts getting adopted and purchased, you can also work. Usually I see this with education, which is kind of, in my mind, at least a subsegment of content or is completely separate, right? But there's also content for internal consumption. And I don't mean internal for the company, but really customer consumption. Mm-hmm. So that's another part where kind of product marketing needs to enable education, aka content, to kind of enable customers to adopt the product. So again, I think it's really about one, really understanding the value of content marketing, identifying where in the sales process you need to kind of slot in content for which team members, right? Whether it's the buyer, the champion, or maybe like someone like IT or procurement, and how product marketing can give kind of the necessary input so content marketing can take it and run with it.
Yeah, I love what you mentioned there about the language you use and like listening to the customer and kind of repeating it back to them. I think that's we as marketers, myself included, sometimes we just overcomplicate it so much sometimes of like,
for sure.
This is our messaging. This is how we say it. And it's like, well, really it should be like, you should be using the customer's language, right? They're the people that have been through the process, that have purchased the platform or using the platform. Like, let's just get people selling to themselves. Let's speak their language. Let's use exactly what they are saying to make it make the most sense for the future customers, right? That's something we've actually been working on a lot right now at Audience Plus of like, let's be like extremely literal with what we are capable of and what we deliver, you know. And I think I say sometimes, you know, marketing should be 6 months, 3 months, whatever you want to say, ahead of product. There's some debate there, but like, so you don't want to be, you know, too literal. I think you can have some vision and some future looking elements to it, but especially in a difficult market where you're having to steal budget and you're not able to create budget, I think like you've got to use the language that they've got they being prospects, customers have a very specific pain point and you need to wedge yourself into that. And I think the best way to do that is to sell back to them by using their language. So I really
love definitely. That.
All right. Well, Jonathan, we always ask all of our guests here, what's an unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
I think webinars just don't work anymore. Maybe that's popular, unpopular. I don't know. I guess I'd have to put out a survey. but I don't know. It just feels like COVID era kind of destroyed webinars for most people. We all shifted towards in-person events. And now webinars kind of feel like personalization at scale, where it's like, hey, come join these like 100 other people. We're also interested in this topic. We're going to take 40 minutes to answer the one question you had. And at the end of those 40 minutes, you're going to be like, man, this could have been an email. So I think companies like User Evidence are doing a really good job. Jillian and Alex at User Evidence are doing a really good job of basically saying like, hey, we know we have different kind of needs, right? Some folks want the webinar. Some folks want to watch the recording. And some folks just need the takeaways. And I'm squarely in the takeaways bucket. And that's what I love when you can go and just get 3 to 6 bullets and saying like, here's what you need to know. Here's how you can act on it, period. The short answer is webinars in their current format, in my opinion, are dead. They just don't really work. I know there's a ton of companies making a ton of pipe or generating a ton of pipeline through webinars. I just think for the average B2B SaaS company, they just don't make sense. So that's my take.
It's interesting. During COVID, it felt like there was actually, you know, there was a spike in webinars. That was all
massive. Anyone could
do. But there was also like kind of a spike in creativity of those webinars. Like I remember attending a tequila tasting one.
And, yep.
You know, like it was just like there was a lot of creativity. And it's like, then we came out of COVID and it was like, oh, virtual events worked. Let's keep doing them. But what we lost is that like a little bit of that forced creativity. And now we're just doing kind of bland webinars. I've been guilty of this in the past. Again, like I think the fireside chat type webinar where it's like four guests and you just kind of sit and tee up Q&A for like 45 minutes. Like there's a time and place for that. And there's topics for that where that does work. But like we're working on a webinar right now in April, but I was like, our guests that we're going to have, like, I want you to build some slides and like talk about an actual playbook or an actual use case. You can show product if you want. Like I want it to be actually like tactical as opposed to just like,
right,
we're going to answer questions for 45 minutes. Then we're going to answer some more questions and like, good luck everybody. I don't know. It might or might not work. People, I could envision an attendee saying, oh, this was a sales pitch. All they did was push their product. And I'm interested to see how that goes because we've done the kind of panel conversations and we're really making an effort to make this next one more kind of hands-on, and I'm interested to see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think hands-on will work because what we're so used to is going to webinars and getting thought leadership, and like thought leadership is cool and all and it's helpful, but to a point, it's sort of like when you go on, you know, webinar and you have Arnold Schwarzenegger 30 years ago telling you, all right, bud, you got to work out. So work out five times a day, drink protein shakes, and eat a lot of chicken and fish. And you're like, great, super helpful. Like basically eat healthy and work out. Yeah. Fantastic. Versus like, if you go to the webinar now and there's like, hey, here's a PDF that you're going to download after the webinar. Here are the 15 exercises you need to do. You need to do three sets of this, 10 sets of this, you know, three times a day for the next 6 weeks, like something actionable. That's what people crave. Like, yeah, especially in the era of ChatGPT and LLMs and even Google with their little Gemini, summarizer at the top, like people just want answers. Tell me what I need to do. Give me the justification as to why. And that's what they want. So at least, yeah, that's what I'm hearing. So,
and appropriately, you're ending it with a great content lesson there. People want the usable stuff. They want the downloadable template that they can print off and use. We see that across our platform. Templates outperform any other content format by a factor of three. When I always say, you know, they want that slideshow they can download, make a copy of the Excel spreadsheet, the 2x2 matrix, perhaps. They want all of those usable assets. So I think that's a great lesson there. Jonathan, if people want to learn more from you or learn more about Blue Manta Consulting, what's the best way to do that?
They can follow me on LinkedIn. It's a very creative name, my name, Jonathan Pipik. And then they can always go to my website, bluemantaconsulting.com.
Great. We'll have all of those links in the show notes. I would encourage everybody to go follow Jonathan on LinkedIn. Great follow. You'll learn a lot along the way. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you can pour a 2x2 matrix of Woodford tonight and enjoy that. To all of our watchers and listeners, thanks for joining another episode of the Content Cocktail Hour. Until next time, cheers.
Thanks so much, Jonathan.
Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by Audience Plus. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us at audienceplus.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.